Welcome back to SEL Convergence.
Hello, everybody. I'm so happy to be with you again this evening. Again, my dear friend and producer, Mike Mandel, is with us. And I have a wonderful guest, Rebecca Lewick from Unionville-Chadsford School District. Rebecca is a school counselor up on that beautiful elementary school up on the hill, Poughkeepsie Elementary, where you can see almost all of Chester County and Delaware County. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
I am thrilled you're with us today. We're going to talk about some really important things for our children, for our students, but also for our educators. The idea of really kind of digging in to all the big feelings that we have, all of us have. I have big feelings. They seem to be getting bigger at 70 years old, not smaller. But what I'm happy about is my big feelings come right to the surface and I can express them very, very comfortably at this point in my life. And I imagine you're working on doing that with your young people every day, yes?
That's exactly right. And I think what we're thinking about with adults having big feelings, and I was sharing, I had some big feelings just now. We were having our house painted right before the podcast. One of my dogs escaped, ran down the stairs covered in paint, ran through the kitchen, completed kitchen floor, bright blue paw prints everywhere. And I'm trying to pick them up and I'm saying some things that would not be suitable for school. And I'm realizing how absolutely perfect this moment is, right? Because I'm having absolutely enormous feelings and I was very much in them in the moment and didn't have a lot of perspective. Once it passed, I was able to think, oh, this is really good stuff. This is perfect for meeting with Tom in a few minutes. But I do think that, you know, these kiddos, they aren't born knowing how to express feelings or label feelings. We often as adults weren't taught those things at home. I was reading a poll. It was about less than half of Americans grew up in homes where mental well-being, mental health was discussed, where kids were taught to label emotions. So that's kind of the basics of what I get down with, both with the students with whom I work and then the parents that I am supporting in helping their kids with the big emotions that pop up, certainly through the day and certainly 2+ years into this pandemic that we experienced, right? The feelings are as big as they've ever been, and they need us more than ever.
Rebecca, you mentioned something really important to pandemic, which is still very much on my mind and in my heart, and in the experience, I think, of almost every school I'm visiting. What are you seeing in terms of children's feelings and behaviors in the elementary school?
So, you know, I'm in a K-5 building. It's a large building. We have over 500 students. One of the biggest things we've been seeing in the past, I'd say 5 to 10 years, has been an uptick in anxiety. Anxiety in general is something we're seeing. It's almost ubiquitous. It's what we're seeing. What I have seen in the last 2 years is more of separation anxiety, more to the point where it's school refusal, kiddos who just want to be at home so badly that they won't come into the building. We've had multiple students with that this year, and that's atypical. And then in terms of just social skills, right? Because these kiddos that I work with, they were 2 and 3 years old in 2020. They missed nursery school, preschool. If they did go, it was very spotty. And a lot of those problem-solving skills, social skills, things where the big feelings do pop up because I've never had to share all the crayons at my table or I haven't had to work these problems out before. So there's going to be a big uptick in, these big emotional outbursts that kiddos are having. So, you know, students are needing more support in the classroom, which is something that I've been working hard on this year with their teachers who truly are doing an incredible job. But one of the things that we've been working on a lot is instead of having to, you know, there's typically one school counselor, right? But we can do things to keep them in the classroom and support them in the room. So working on calm down corners or peace tables or things that where they can keep kiddos in the classroom sends a really important message to them that the feelings are okay that they're having, that they can be managed in the room and that we're there to support them. So that's been a big thing this year.
for our listeners, pull out maybe an example or two with as much specificity as you can and share with them as a counselor, and what I also heard, as a counselor in partnership with that classroom teacher, some very specific things you're doing. Because the, one of the great things, Rebecca, not only do we have a lot of teachers listening, we have a lot of counselors listening. So I know what you're going to share can help them both.
So the first thing that I try to do in all of the classrooms is normalize feelings or emotions. So I'll go in and I'll talk to students with the teachers together about what are feelings, what makes them pop up, are they all okay to have, trying to help students begin to label their feelings. So right now in first grade, we're making these giant posters and we're listing all the feelings that we can think of. And then as days go on, the kids are excited to add to this. So if the teacher's reading a story, a picture book, and a feeling that they hadn't thought of yet, brave, magnificent, terrified, anything pops up that can go on this feelings list, that it's a running list that we keep during the year. Increasing feelings vocabulary is an incredibly powerful thing to do. It can be done at home as well. Parents can easily just pop up a paper on their refrigerator and kiddos can just be adding to feelings. They get excited to do it. It's challenging. And the reason that that's important is because they've done enough studies of labeling emotions where the mere fact of labeling slows it down. Slows down your reaction time. They say it kind of tamps the brakes of the amygdala so that you're not going to have that huge reaction. So it's a very, again, it's a very powerful thing, but it's so simple to do. So having more feelings, words are better. So that's one of the things that we do. I also talk to kids a great deal about where they feel things inside of their body. We talk about that the body's sending us signals. There's some really great children's books about that, but where is it coming from? Can we put our hand on that place? Can we sit with it? Just helping parents and teachers and kiddos make space for the things that are popping up is a big part of what we're doing in classes. So labeling, identifying where they're coming from, knowing that all feelings are okay to have. And then, as I mentioned, those calm down areas. So most of our classrooms have those at Pocopson. Certainly the K-2 level I can speak for. And what that tends to consist of is just an area. It doesn't have to be a corner. Kiddos can vote on the name, you know, Zen, Den, Calm Down Core, whatever they like. They might call it Australia or Hawaii. But we typically will have some fidgets, poppets, things that make it appealing to be there. Some soft, you know, stuffies or soft chair to sit in. And I'll typically have a timer that they can set. So we'll say, you know, maybe a 2-minute timer, maybe a 5-minute timer. And if they still need more time, they can flip it over. But that can be helpful along with a couple of rules about what the purpose is, how long we're there. I think the one thing teachers will worry about a little bit with a calm down corner. So what if they just go there and don't come back, right? So it's important to set some boundaries around the calm down area, which we do. And typically kids really respond to it. You don't really see, you know, kiddos quote unquote taking advantage of it. They really seem to know when they need it. And if they're still having a hard time, well, that's when a Mrs. Lewick or someone maybe needs to take you for a little break and process outside of the room. So that can be a really easy thing. And again, it conveys that message that your feelings are okay in here. Your feelings are something that I can handle as your teacher. We can manage this together. And I think it's very empowering for the educator as well. Certainly teachers can go sit in the calm down corner when they need to and take a break, right? We can model
that. Have you seen that, Rebecca?
I will do it for kids. Like I'll
wonderful.
Yeah. So during my lessons, one of the things that I try to do is just model that I have real feelings in the moment. And if kids are, you know, interrupting or doing things, I'll just process how I'm feeling inside of my body and where I'm feeling it. And that's one of the easiest things I think educators can do, because we're full of feelings all the time, just like they are, right?
I just think that is so fantastic. What it tells me is that you are modeling for those children and you're telling them it's okay. This is okay. Whatever we're feeling is okay. And you are doing it in real time with them. I think I'm just thrilled to hear that.
Oh, That, thank you for saying that. I, a lot of our teachers, I think, are really adept at doing that, because especially these days, we have one first grade teacher and she's so awesome. And she taught the kids overwhelmed. The noise level in here is so high that I feel overwhelmed. And so they'll say, I feel overwhelmed by the noise. And so she's increasing their feelings vocabulary just by modeling that for them. Right. And saying, again, it's acceptable. We all have these things rising up in us. The other important part for kids and adults to realize is that not only are all feelings okay, but they're transient, they're temporary. So they're not going to stay. I love Mark Brackett from Yale, and he talks about how emotions are like a river. They're always flowing, or like weather systems come and go. We're not going to be able to keep the happy, joyful feelings any more than we're going to be stuck forever and ever in pain or sadness. They're going to come and go. And I think that helps children and adults feel more willing to sit with things, knowing that they aren't permanent. They aren't going to stay around forever.
I love the example of the weather, because I think children and all of us can understand that. And then in a piece that you sent me in writing, you talked about that transience again. It's a visitor. It's like a visitor, somebody visiting our home. And I just thought that was fantastic.
Oh my gosh. That's like one of my favorite poems by Rumi. I don't know if you've read the guest
house. I love Rumi. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that guest house, I think about it all the time. Like, you know, the things that are visiting us are clearing space for something wonderful that we can't possibly foresee. The pain and the sorrow, those are visitors. And we don't know. They're not bad. They're not good. We don't know what they are. We don't know. And I was thinking in preparation for this discussion about when I started and what I knew about feelings when I started as a counselor, or what I understood about young kids' understanding of feelings. And my very first lesson, and I was in a first grade classroom, teeny kids, this little boy raised his hand and he said, "Well, Mrs. Lewick, do you ever have sad or mad feelings?" And it was like every word he said, it was just, his words were just hanging in the air. Like what I was going to say was going to be so important to him. And I said, "Oh my gosh, all the time. Of course I do." And his little shoulders relaxed and he went, "Ah." Oh. And I thought, okay, this is where we have to start, is just absolutely, you know. And again, that part where we can even, you know, "Oh, I got lost on the way to class. I turned the wrong direction. It made me late. I felt overwhelmed or angry or whatever it is. So I took a couple deep breaths," just in real time modeling for kids that having a negative feeling or one that doesn't feel good doesn't mean you are bad. And having good feelings doesn't mean that you're good. It's just something that will rise up inside of you. And again, will pass. And I think a lot about that with kids, because we do identify so strongly, like I just did with my dog with the paint. I was just full of frustration. And I wasn't seeing, I'm a person having this experience. I was fully just that experience, right? And so we can help kiddos with that. We can help them name these emotions that they're having. They say, like, if you can name it, you can tame it, kind of thing, right? We can get a little space from it.
I love your examples. Your examples in our social emotional learning world bring me to self-awareness and self-management. And as I'm listening to you twice now so far this evening, you have given us examples that give permission to students to have whatever feeling they're having. I love when you shared that having that negative or bad feeling is not you. But I also love that you really shared also that having the good feeling does not mean that's not you. These are feelings. And again, they're transient, as you mentioned before. And so many of us, and still even folks my age, that we're having these feelings and we're holding on to them as this is who I am. And
yes,
and how empowering. What a gift you're giving to these young people.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. I feel inspired just talking to you about it. And I think I think, and I tell kids this, that I get to teach them and learn with them the most important thing. Math is important, reading's important, all those things are, but this is going to be the thing that can create a really happy, you know, happy, peaceful life for them. And so that's really the goal, not even happiness, but contentment, that they will know how to manage the things that come up for them, is going to be the thing that carries them through. So I always come in and I'm like, I'm not going to offend your teacher by saying this, but I get to do the most important thing in this whole building. And they're like, are you the principal? No, not the principal. I'm the feelings lady. I get to talk to you about something you carry with you all day, every single day. And I carry it with me. And they are powerful sources of information. They're like messages that our body's sending us all the time and that we can pay attention to, and they can teach us things. And it's, you know, feelings are kind of the coolest.
Now, as you're sharing, I am zooming right in. I'm completely engaged with you. I can only imagine when a kindergarten, first, second grader is hearing that, I can imagine their eyes getting real big, their heart getting real big, and they're just like absorbing everything. Now, take me a couple years later.
Mm.
What does this discussion look like? What's it sound like? And how, in your experience, is it received in your fourth and fifth graders?
Sure. So I think, you know, for the older kiddos, we're going to be more conscientious or cognizant of the fact that like the little kid stuff or the programs that we do in the younger grades may not be thought of as quite as cool or sophisticated. I think the reality is that every grown-up I know, myself included, can benefit from like however you feel is okay. These are important lessons for anybody, right? So with the older students, I think the bigger thing is just holding that space for them. Now, I'm the K-2 counselor in my school. We have a counselor that's third, fourth, and fifth.
Okay.
Now we often see each other's students because it's a big school and all kinds of things pop up. I feel lucky enough to have known most of them when they were small. So we have a shorthand, but I have a middle schooler at home.
Ah.
We have these kinds of conversations all the time. And so the foundations that she has that we've worked on since she was itty bitty are things that we still work on, but in a more mature sort of way. The biggest thing I think for us to do, and the thing that the fourth and fifth graders benefit from, is just knowing that they are loved, that they are wanted in the building. And that whatever they want to share, we're going to hold a space open for them. So I wouldn't approach a class in the same way I would approach a kindergarten class, but there's still so much wonder and so much love. You still have the fourth and fifth graders come up and they'll give you a little squeeze on the way into the building. Okay. That's still there. And again, I think the biggest part is just you belong here. You are part of this community. You're an important part. The school doesn't run the same way when you're not here.
Ooh, and wonderful.
So that's the thing that I try to impart when I do get the opportunity to work with the older kiddos in the building.
As you were just speaking, whatever I'm reading right now, and Mike knows I tend to read a number of books at the same time, I keep coming connecting back to John Bowlby's work on secure attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And you are speaking about that right now. To let a child know, kindergarten, fifth grade, 70 years old, to let them know that you are loved, you are cared for, you are cared about. And I loved what you said. This building is not the same without you. What a beautiful and powerful statement that is.
I think that's one of the most powerful things I've seen with our students who have separation anxiety or school refusal this year, is just to keep trying to bring that home to them, that they are wanted and needed in that room, that they change the scope of everything that happens when they're in the building, and that they belong with us. The older students, I have a few older students at Pocopson working with younger kiddos, right? So students that I might have worked closely with when they were younger are now in the fourth and fifth grade, and they get to be more the role models and the leaders. I think in those cases, it's really amazing because you can keep getting the messages to them that you still want to get to them by having them help the younger kids, right? So there's this particular student who I think the absolute world of, just an incredible kiddo. And that student is reading some self-compassion books to a first grader.
Oh, beautiful.
That's something that we've been working on for many years. Now he is going to, he's the teacher and he gets to impart that wisdom to somebody else. The cool thing about the older kids is that you get to have these deeper experiences. You know, what would a wise friend say to you? What would someone who loves you frame this situation like for you? You know, you can do a little bit more with those kinds of ideas with the older kiddos too, which I really enjoy. But I mean, we're all the same on the inside, as far as I can tell. The 5-year-olds and the 50-year-olds, we all need that same message that we're okay and that whatever we're feeling is okay too.
And that last piece you just shared, I found myself saying this often when we were in the throes of the pandemic, and we were all virtual, that it's okay not to be okay. You know, whatever feelings you're having, they're okay. So let me bring you to this pandemic, all the challenges within it, and knowing that some things don't change quickly. Some things don't change at all. The loss of someone you love, for a child, experiencing that. And one of the things that I know is you're helping children deal with these, as you said, very, very big feelings. Are you working one-on-one? Are you working small groups? Are you doing all of those things? Give our listeners some examples of when a child is just dealing with the big, big life stuff.
So in those situations, you know, we get to be kind of, you know, overall, we work with the entire school. We do classroom guidance lessons. That's where I get to try to help lay that foundation of what we've been talking about, how to label feelings, where are they coming from, what are they doing. But then with students individually, we tend to do individual counseling with students, particularly because, as we know, the mental health caseloads, counselors have long waiting lists at this point. So school counselors are kind of filling in a big gap there, a big need. Mm-hmm. We've always been in that role, but never more so than these days. So we will work with students individually to help them gain those skills. Again, sit with however they're feeling, help them allow the emotional responses that they're having, because that's one of the biggest things. I think I can see in kids when they see that you don't get rattled by what they're feeling, when you're not going to try to outsource it or think, oh my gosh. And it's normal to do that because we have so much we need to teach on a given day. And we have so many pressures on us as educators to think, oh my gosh, I've even thought during my own lessons, someone has a reaction. I'm thinking, I don't know if I have time for this. Like, this is it. This is what it is. This is the whole lesson. But it's easy to get into that mindset. So I think that's where the individual counseling comes in, and really close partnerships with families, connecting after I work with a child individually. Here's the key takeaways from today. Here's something that we can be working on, certainly with the younger students, any kind of books, resources that they can be doing at home. There's mm-hmm. such awesome resources for kids, workbooks, and and the children's literature is incredible for social emotional learning, and one of the ways to make them feel safe and comfortable. Because if they come to my room and they're having a big feeling, reading a book takes the pressure off of them, the attention off of them. They can play with Play-Doh. They can play with the Pop-It. I'll read a story. I'll talk about how I was having that feeling earlier today. You know, it's amazing how quickly some of these things will dissolve into another feeling once you just hold that little space.
So just a slight little side road. Mike knows this. My favorite things to read, and I am a voracious reader, are oversized children's picture books. So can you share with our listeners a couple of your favorites as a school counselor?
Yes. I love that question. So, okay. So we talked about visiting feelings. So there's a book by, I believe she's also a school counselor. Her name is Lauren Rubinstein, and she has a book called Visiting Feelings. And if you like Rumi and you like that, you know, something's knocking at my door, what's it going to be? That's the book for you. That's a beautiful one. When sadness is at your door.
Wow.
My go-to. That is my favorite. I've been using that a lot because frankly, a lot of really sad kiddos show up at my door and they don't know why they're sad and they don't really even know what's going on. So I'm like, I have the best book for us. And it's essentially how sometimes sadness just shows up and we just hold its hand and we just let it walk with us. And eventually it might tell us what it needs. It might have a message for us. And we talk about, where are you feeling your sadness? Where is it visiting you right now? Has it shifted at all since we started the story? Where is it now? And it's okay. It'll come when it needs to come and it'll go when it needs to go. So when sadness is at your door is one of my other favorites. For young kids, I love The Boy with Big, Big Feelings.
Ooh, nice.
So that's a good one because the boy in the story, they don't give him a name, but he feels things at a very high level of sensitivity, even joyous things, things that are sad for him. He feels big feelings and he thinks he's the only person that has them. So he's afraid to show his big feelings to other people.
Uh-huh.
Read that with, you know, kindergarten, first grade, the real little guys. Those are a few of my favorites. I feel like I could list so many, but those are some of my go-tos.
It must be beautiful to watch from your perspective as you're reading, to watch a child who comes in with these big feelings or a big sadness, and watch that calm just settle in because they're listening to their trusted counselor who's telling them a story about themselves. And they know they're not the only one.
And it's such a cool opportunity that I get every single day. It's hard to beat. I mean, what's more incredible than these little humans trusting you that you understand what's happening inside of them and that you know that it's not dangerous. And then it might feel scary. But I have plenty of kiddos who will say, oh, well, that's just my amygdala. My amygdala is telling me something that I don't have to listen to. Right?
That's so great. So you're teaching them about their brain.
Absolutely. So that's another book. It's called Hey Warrior by Karen Young. And it's about your amygdala and how your amygdala is your own fierce warrior that lives inside of your brain. And it's there to protect you. We don't have to be mad at ourselves for having anxiety. We don't have to fight with it. Because that's the thing, even as an adult, right? Like, I'm like, I don't want to feel like this.
Yeah.
I just don't want to have this feeling. I'm sick of it. Is this just, like you said, who I am? Why am I still grappling with the same thing? And it's just saying, hey, just like the sadness, hey, we can just befriend this. It's here actually to help us. We don't need it right now, maybe. So we can say, hey, amygdala, you can just simmer down for a little while. I'll let you know when I need you. Right now, it feels like an emergency, but it's not one. That's really helpful for the separation anxious kids and the, you know, again, the school refusal students that we've had this year, just to say, okay, it feels dangerous. It feels like I'm in a situation that I've got to get out of.
Yeah.
And that's panic. And that feeling will pass. It's like a wave that's going to crash and it will pass. It's just really uncomfortable for a little while.
That's beautiful. So the in your building, you have, if I heard correctly, about 500 kiddos?
Yeah, about, as far as I know, around 550.
And how many staff do you have?
Well, that's a great question.
Just a ballpark.
Yeah, well, we've got, let's see, you know, we have a half-day kindergarten. So we have two kindergarten teachers. We've got five first grade teachers. Four second grade teachers. So, you know, we've got a lot of emotional support staff. So we have a school social worker, We have an emotional support teacher that's in our building who I adore and work really closely with. She's really helpful. Two counselors, K to two and three to five. Mm. And we have, you know, full-time school psychologist, full-time speech and language pathologist who often does a bit of that language, helping kids speak about what they need and advocate themselves. So that is a very SEL kind of, we all overlap a great deal in the building for sure.
So that team, that helping team, what kinds of things are you doing for the staff?
So, you know, we have faculty meetings, and as part of those faculty meetings, we're broken up into teams and we have all kinds of team exercises. But, you know, we've had since COVID some staff community circle meetings that we have done for the last couple of years. We do something called bucket filling, which is based on the book Kibby Photo Buckets, a really cute, simple kids book, but we do it K to five. And every week, you know, every day the kids will fill out notes for each other, just having gratitude for a small thing that another student does, holding the door open, getting your pencils. But we also have the kids do it for teachers. And each Friday on air, we have a little TV station. We'll draw a bucket filler of the week that's a student, and we'll draw a bucket filler of the week that's a staff member. And they get to go to the main office and get a little prize, but recognizing the incredible amount of things that they're doing for us on any given moment or of any given day is important. We have a super active, we have a group within our staff called the Sunshine Committee, and we have lots of, you know, activities that we get together and do for the teachers. So ultimately, I think the biggest thing we do for each other, and something that I absolutely love, is that you never feel alone in our school. You never feel like this is my kid and I have to, it's all hands on deck. When I first started at school, I would hear from one person, if I heard from five, that a kiddo was alone at recess. It would be one person passed me in the hall, did you see so-and-so? He was alone. And then another person. It's never, you have that all hands on deck feeling every day. Epicopson, it's pretty amazing.
That's beautiful. So as we start to wind down our time together, I'm going to ask you two questions. First students, then staff. What's one thing I'm going to choose to say coming out of these challenging times of the pandemic? What's one thing you'd want to make sure that every staff member either gives or focuses their energy on for students?
So I think one of the greatest gifts, and as much as it's gone with everything we've talked about already, is for teachers to feel that their feelings are heard and seen, that the students in their rooms are heard and seen, and that we can all together have what they call a growth mindset about emotions, meaning we can all get better at dealing with emotions ourselves, for the students in our room. So looking at whatever things are popping up for kids that they can grow and get better. They can get better at labeling things. They can get better at the strategies that they use. They can start to advocate by going to a calm down corner themselves, to look at the students and realize that we know we've all gone through this incredible, incredible trauma together. And hopefully that they can have that takeaway that we can all be getting better at managing the big feelings that we're having. It's something where we can all keep growing, you know, side by side with each other, along with the students.
I'm really grateful that you did identify what we've all been going through as a trauma. I really appreciate that. I really believe it. I use the same phrase myself. So now you may have already answered this in your past response, but so all the wonderful educators, all the caring staff within your building and all the buildings that are listening to this across the country, one thing that the adults need to be doing for ourselves right now?
That immediately comes to mind as self-compassion. You know, I keep going back to this thing that happened before I got on the call, but I didn't handle it in a way that I was particularly thrilled with. I wasn't excited about my reaction. But that to me, every time that happens, I think, ding, 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 this is an opportunity here for showing myself grace, showing myself compassion. And the same thing with my own children and my students. I'm going to make mistakes all the time. We're going to make mistakes. That's just for human beings. And instead of thinking of that as the thing that is taking away from our own children or our class, it's giving to them, depending on how we handle it, depending on how skillfully we deal with that. So while maybe in the moment, it wasn't what you wanted it to be, maybe it wasn't the lesson you wanted it to be, or maybe you don't have the relationship with a student that you are hoping to have, or a parent, right? We have really difficult relationships all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the part where I will say to myself, what do I need right now? What would someone who loves me very much say to me? Or what can I say to myself? What would I say to someone that I really love in this moment? Would I berate them? Would I give them love? Would I tell them that they're doing the very best that they could in that moment? And that I see them. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I've been working hard on for myself. And I know that no matter what mistakes I make during the day that anyone sees, that's the bigger takeaway is how did I treat myself after it?
I love that. Thank you so much, Rebecca. Thank you for sharing your experiences. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. And absolutely, thank you for sharing your caring. Thanks for being with us, my friend. And Mike, thank you always for producing. Much appreciated, friend.
Thank you so much.